Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about understanding dolphins from a position of ignorance, a New Scientist article by Aaron Ford, a scientist journal based in Bristol, UK. The article is on page 41 of 30th of June 2018. I'm reading this as a cardiac rehab to increase my, I suppose, the brain stuff. I have a bit of a discussion about the operation I had and effects on my brain channels and strokes and things like that. Creatures of War. It was the unlikeliest of settings that we began to understand dolphins, writes Aaron Froude. Where was that damn dolphin? Tuffy was nowhere to be seen. It was 1964, and the military's top brass was assembled on a boat off the coast of San Diego, California, to watch a dolphin prove he was fit to join the U.S. Navy operations. Sam Ridgway had the job of caring for dolphins in the Navy's Cretean research program, and as the minutes ticked by, began to get nervous. Ridgway was confident of Tuffy's ability to deliver a package to the precise location on the seafloor, one of the tasks he had been set today. But the dolphin was swimming freely in the ocean. Perhaps he had decided not to come back. Maybe the naysayers were right, and these wild animals would never be trusted to carry out the extraordinary, dangerous missions they were being prepared for. Then, in the distance, a grey dorsal fin broke the surface. Within a few moments, Tuffy was sliding nonchalantly into the holding canvas on the side of the boat for the trip back to base. For around 80 bottlenose dolphins, it was the start of a tour of duty that would see them being deployed to war zones around the world to assist the U.S. military operations. It was also when, thanks to Ridgway, humans began to really learn about dolphins and their biology. The U.S. military first took an interest in dolphins in 1950 as templates for torpedo design, but their agility, trainability, and incredible sensitive sonar had gone unnoticed, and by the 1960s, a new, more ambitious program was in the works. It has not gone unnoticed. There was a problem, though. In captivity, animals kept dying after just a few months. Back then, very little was known about how dolphins lived. Ridgway was a veterinary officer in charge of guard dogs when he was asked to carry out an autopsy on one of the dolphins. Though he knew as little about Cretans as anyone else, he agreed, eventually concluding he had died of pneumonia. Impressed, his superiors tasked him with caring for new arrivals. The dolphins thrived under Ridgway's care, but he had to start from scratch. Improvements in dolphin health was a long, slow process of learning and paying attention to every detail of their lives, Ridgway recalls. That included studying their social interactions to prevent injurious fights. All the dolphins are individuals, and each one must be managed according to their own personality, he says. Deep divers. Over the next decade, dolphins at the Naval Missile Center at Port Mugu, California, were taught a number of tasks. Handlers were brought in, and some fresh from training animals in Hollywood movies, others from the sea circus show at the Pacific Ocean Park in nearby Santa Monica. Dolphins started out in pools, graduating to nearby lagoons. Operations in the open ocean began after Tuffy proved that dolphins would return to base. For Ridgway, this time was not just looking after dolphins, but of pioneering research. Everyone had previously assumed, for example, dolphins lived mainly at the surface. Ridgway established that they could dive more than 300 metres and hold their breath for up to 10 minutes. This meant they could be trained to locate objects deep underwater, such as mines and lost ordnance. He also showed that they could dive to those depths in less than a minute without getting the bends, something that humans can avoid only by descending over several hours. When the handlers taught Tuffy to operate an underwater camera, producing what is possibly the first ever mammal selfie, Ridgway began to understand why a picture taken at depth revealed an eerie image of a dolphin's sunken ribcage, lungs partially collapsed to counteract the high pressure. When Ridgway wanted to collect air from the dolphin's lungs, Tuffy seemed to know what he wanted, blowing bubbles into the captured device before surfacing to breathe. The samples confirmed the lungs collapse prevented nitrogen gas from reaching the bloodstream. This informed research on why humans get the bends and how it might be avoided. Tuffy was crucial in those early days. All the questions we started answering because the animals cooperated, swimming freely and then coming back to us, says Ridgway. And we needed an animal in good health for that. If they weren't in good health, they would leave. Although their health improved under Ridgway's care, the animals still got sick or injured from time to time and sometimes needed surgeries. Dolphins breathe by an opening and closing their nostril or blowhole on the top of their heads. To do this, they need a level of consciousness. Dolphins even sleep with half their brain at a time for this reason. Under anesthetic, they simply stop breathing. Ridgway found a solution designing a special respirator to move air in and out of the animal's lungs. He also worked out how to correct dose of anesthetic for dolphins, leading to a landmark science paper in 1967. By this time, things were hotting up in Vietnam. The US Navy had hitherto been relatively open about the dolphin program, even releasing a propaganda film in 1964 called The Dolphin That Joined the Navy, starring an actor, Navy reservist Glenn Ford. That openness changed with war. The program was ramped up to include sea lions and orcas and marked classified. On duty in Vietnam, Cam Ranh Bay was the site of a vast US ordnance store for the escalating of the war. It was also where the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese sappers swam to the US ships and planted lipid mines. There were 42 incidences in 67 and 127 in the following year. An attack in November 1968 killed 25 and wounded 27 sailors. Okay. US Navy sailors. The Navy's greatest loss at the war in a single incident. And the officer in charge, Admiral Zumwalt, wanted a solution. He got wind of the dolphin program, which had by then trained dolphins to flag the presence of humans in water. In December 1970, 5 dolphins were deployed to comb the harbour area. If they spotted a swimmer, they would return to base and press a red button with their snouts. They also acted as a physical deterrent to anyone trying to reach the ships. People think twice about getting past them, said Ridgway. For the 9 months that the dolphins were on patrol, there was no seaborne attacks. Since then, the US Navy dolphins have been deployed in Bahrain during the Iran-Iraq War of the late 80s and Umquaza Harbour during the 2003 invasion of Iraq. They've even guarded nuclear submarines. In fact, the US Navy's marine mammal program continues to this day despite criticism and lawsuits from animal rights and environmental groups over the years. Ridgway says the dolphins like their work. If they didn't, they would swim away. But clearly, many people are uncomfortable with the idea of militarizing such animals. In 2012, it was announced that the mine-hunting arm of the program will be wound down in favor of a drone system. Ridgway doubts dolphins will be replaced quickly. I think they will be needed for some time because their sonar and their ability to swim and change course on a dime characteristics are very hard to duplicate with a robot, he says. Now, 82, Ridgway is president of the US National Maritime Mammal Foundation and still studies dolphins by the Pacific Ocean in San Diego. His latest discovery is that they give victory squeals when they have successfully marked a mine target. We're still recording sounds that dolphins make when doing their jobs, he says. We'd like to know more about their communication during their work. We're probably missing a lot. Ridgway says he still thinks about Tuffy. One of the dolphins' early missions was to locate a lost missile cradle. At dusk on a calm sea, Tuffy swam for several miles beside their boat out to the search area. He found the cradle on the seabed, led the Navy's divers to it, and seemed pleased with his achievement. Tuffy leapt above the surface, and chills ran up my spine, says Ridgway. I never imagined at the time a time like this. This is the first. Would the world believe such a thing was happening? People now call Ridgway the grandfather of maritime mammal science. I really don't think there will ever be another Sam Ridgway because Sam just did so much in his long and pioneering research, says Paul Jessen, Zoological Society of London, who studies Cretacean biology. He's a living legend, absolutely. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.